It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And I'm coming to you from out of the country, so if it's a bit of a... This morning, if the connection's not that great, I'm in Argentina, which I'll report more on next Sunday when I'm back. In the meantime, I want to start off by mentioning an individual who's iconic in the conservation world, who passed away recently while fishing on a salmon stream in Quebec. This individual is Nathaniel P. Reed, and most of you are saying, I'm not aware of this person. If you're in Florida listening to the show or have been to Florida, chances are you've heard of Nat Reed. Nat Reed died at the age of 84 while fishing for salmon, Atlantic salmon. He had just caught a 16-pound Atlantic salmon and slipped and fell after catching it and landing it and hit his head on a rock and never recovered. Nat Reed is iconic and one of the giants in American history when it comes to conservation and saving America's environment. A great deal has been written about him in his life. He was, as any individual who takes a leadership position, he was not without controversy. But I personally had the pleasure of knowing Nat Reed for much of my life and know that he was a man of impeccable integrity, conviction, strong-willed, and yet at the same time compassionate, able to compromise. But when Nat Reed decided that there was a conservation or environmental issue to be taken on, take notice, because 9 out of 10 times he was going to prevail, and he was going to prevail in a way that did so without what goes on today with a lot of adversity. He was going to prevail in a way that brought people together to realize that the common good was better than individual gains. His primary work was in Florida, where if there's ever an individual who helped save Florida, it's Nat Reed. And there's certainly been many iconic individuals in Florida who worked to save the Everglades and other parts of Florida. But Nat Reed was an individual who fought for his entire life. He stopped the jet port that would have been west of Miami, which would have pretty much consumed most of the Everglades. He created the Big Cypress National Wildlife Refuge. He helped create the Jonathan Dickinson State Park throughout Florida. He worked in environmental causes to reduce sewage going into the ocean. He, to his last few days, was fighting for the Everglades to have the creation of a new reservoir, which was just approved by Congress. Now it needs to be funded to create an ability for the water from Lake Okeechobee to be filtered south to go into the Everglades. But long before this work, he worked also in Washington, D.C., where he was a champion working with Russell Train and others to create the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act. He was Undersecretary of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks at the Department of Interior at a critical time in the Nixon and Ford administrations when so many of America's really constructive conservation environmental laws were put into place. And yes, at that time, the EPA was also created, but I think the Environmental Protection Agency that was created by individuals such as Nat Reed and Russell Train was very different than the Environmental Protection Agency that it has grown into. It was an agency that was designed to protect our nation's water, to clean up our rivers, to give us clean air. It was not designed to be a heavy-handed regulatory agency, which has become without accountability in recent years. However, the original vision of Nat Reed and others like him was that we would have a national set of standards by which we all live by. And it was not an infringement on state rights, as so many people thought it was. It was that we as Americans deserve the right to have clean water and clean air, to drink, to swim, to breathe, to recreate in. And by and large, that vision, which was in large part assisted by the work of Nathaniel Reed in the late 1960s and early 70s, has come to being. So when he passed in a salmon river in Quebec 2 weeks ago, we lost one of the most significant voices for the betterment of our country's natural resources that we've ever had. And he was not an individual who ever sought political office. He was not an individual who sought fame. He was an individual who did this because he thought it was the right thing. And yes, he had the ability because of the way he operated to work in the highest halls in Washington and also in the backwater swamps of Florida. He could sit down with anyone and reason with them, and with conviction help move an environmental movement that has spanned the past 60 years of work. So Nat Reed is going to be dearly missed by those of us who spent our life in the conservation world and in the business world. He was a businessman's conservationist. He understood that we had to be able to succeed economically at the same time we were protecting our environment. But for the millions of people who visit Florida in the winter and from the Midwest and elsewhere, and those who live there, Florida would be a very, very different place if it was not for the work of Nat Reed and what he did to stop the development into the Everglades, to help stop development on the coastlines. And so while we look, of course, at Florida today and think parts of it have just been paved over and there are people everywhere, the reality is it would be a whole lot worse. And the Everglades, in fact, would be greatly diminished from where it was. So an individual who led a full generation of Americans in the conservation world has sadly moved on, but his legacy, the legacy of Nathaniel P. Reed, will last a long, long time, in fact, if not in perpetuity, in America. We owe him a great debt of thanks. There aren't many people like him. We lost a true giant, but he went out, with his boots on, doing what he loved to do most, salmon fishing, and having just landed a salmon. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. When I come back, I'm going to talk about bicycles in the wilderness, and whether we're going to have them or not, and should we have them. I personally think we should, and we'll discuss that a little bit. In the meantime, here's a message from our longtime sponsors on Northwestern Indiana and Chicagoland, Chevrolet Dealers.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host on WGN Radio, and hope you're enjoying the show. Let's go bicycling, or maybe we don't go bicycling. There is the discussion as to whether bicycles, which have never been permitted in wilderness areas, should be permitted in the wilderness areas. And times change, people's views change, and when the Wilderness Act was created many, many years ago, the idea was, in fact, the Wilderness Act was created in 1964, the idea was to set aside huge swaths of America that would be quote-unquote wilderness, to be as they always were. Well, part of what we've learned and should have known then was that nothing stays the same. Nature is constantly changing. If you think about my show last week, just think about the water levels that are occurring in the Great Lakes and how they go up and down. Well, the Wilderness Act was created with the idea that we would protect in perpetuity, which, as a friend of mine likes to say, is a long time. We would protect in perpetuity some of the most spectacular areas on the American lower 48 as well as Alaska. That was great. But what they did was they locked them up and threw away the key in large part. There was never to be any timber management. There could be no mechanized vehicles. You couldn't do anything that involved any form of invention that would be mechanized. So you could walk. You could ride a horse, you could canoe paddle. That was about it. Other than that, it was to be left alone forever. And the Wilderness Act and Gaylord Nelson of Wisconsin was a prime driver on it. It was a great idea. It is a great idea. But we've learned over time that if things aren't managed, they deteriorate. And a great amount of America's wilderness today is in lousy shape because the trees are diseased, dying, forest fires. It's not natural what's taking place, but that's not the subject of bicycles. So, as I said a moment ago, when the Wilderness Act was created in 1964, the idea was you could just walk through, canoe paddle, leave no trace. And that's a great idea. But things have changed. We didn't have bikes that would go into road areas. So we didn't have the ability to pedal our way through rough terrain. That mountain biking is a term that no one had heard of. In fact, couldn't be conceived that we would have bicycles that would go off into the mountains. But now we have them, and there are many people who would like to see bicycles permitted in our wilderness. So House Resolution 1349 was introduced by Representative Tom McClintock of California, and it would amend the 64 Wilderness Act to state that it does not prohibit the use of non-motorized wheeled vehicles in wilderness areas. It was passed by the House Natural Resource Committee in December, and the Senate has a similar bill titled Human-Powered Travel in Wilderness Areas, Senate Act 2877. Don't you love these names? Human-Powered Travel in Wilderness Areas. And that was introduced by Utah Republican Senator Mike Lee. He goes further, requiring federal land managers to determine within 2 years whether which trails in wilderness areas should be open to all human-powered travel, including that which is mechanically assisted. That is a radical departure from where we are now. Right now, you can't take a camper, a motorhome, an ATV. You can't take anything that is powered by anything other than your arms or your 2 feet or a horse into a wilderness area. So his bill would greatly change the character of wilderness. And it goes too far, in my view, and in the view of a lot of people. It enables local managers of wilderness to put restrictions on their own in areas, but it changes the integrity of the Wilderness Act. What is likely to happen, and Wilderness Watch, which is a group, a loose coalition of people who look after, if you will, the wilderness from the conservation world, they said that the Senate bill, which would allow mechanized traffic, changes the entire integrity of the Wilderness Act. And I think that they are on solid ground there. But hopefully, we can reach a compromise where we recognize that our wilderness is, it's there to be pristine and to remind us of what America was like, but it's also there to be enjoyed. It's not there to have the key thrown away, you know, locked up and the key thrown away. So when I go to wilderness areas, which I frequently do in the course of my life's work, I'm often struck at how you can't even take a chainsaw and clear a trail. So hiking trails were made, but if a 200-year-old ponderosa pine falls across that trail, the only way to remove it is with a handsaw. And you try sawing through 200 years of a ponderosa pine or a cypress or anything like that, it's not done very easily, and it's not done very often. So chainsaws aren't even permitted in the wilderness. So we should have a way to maintain our trails. And also, we should have a way to improve access in our wilderness areas. And if mountain biking is something to be enjoyed, which it is by tens of thousands of individuals, why would it be wrong for you or me to be able to walk for miles through a wilderness area? Why would that be okay for you or me to be able to walk through a wilderness area for miles? But it would be wrong to take a mountain bike and do the exact same thing. Both of us leave footprints. Bike trails, bike treads leave a tread. Humans leave a footprint. The only thing that doesn't leave any kind of print in the wilderness is a canoe. Because a paddle, once it's gone through the water, it's gone. So the Wilderness Act is going to be changed. Hopefully it is not weakened in such a way that it changes the character of what we do in our wilderness areas and why we created them, but it should take into account today's modern ways of getting through wilderness that are not polluting and are not invasive, such as mountain biking. I did notice the other day when I was on a wilderness area in the Rocky Mountains, there was a new sign on a post that said, no drones permitted in wilderness. Who would have thought in 1963 that drones would be an issue when the Wilderness Act was created? So this is why these things evolve. Nothing is static. And the Wilderness Act, which has been so fantastic for our country, should be revisited to look at modern-day uses. So we'll see what happens, but that is definitely something that is taking place. I'll be back next week, and when I am, I'm going to talk about Argentina and what is taking place in Argentina in the world of conservation, an area of the Paraná River that is just spectacular for its wildlife, for its beauty, and which I had the pleasure of visiting many times. So I hope you enjoyed this morning's show on the Great Outdoor Show. I'll be back next Sunday morning with a report from Rosario, Argentina. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.